The greatest bass angler of all times. Boy, what a great opportunity to think about all the great fishermen we've had out there. With me today is Rick Klun, and Rick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk. I just got the opportunity to see a movie that's come out. It's called Bass Man. And I got to tell you, you know, when I looked at it, knowing you and knowing Jay Yellis and knowing Talk the way we do here, it was something that I had a smile on my face sometimes. I had a tear in my eye at other times. And I thought the documentary did a good job of kind of getting some inside, you know, information on what makes you guys tick and maybe the quandary that goes on, you know, in the bass fishing business and, you know, from the standpoint of you got home relationships, you got the fishing relationships and how you balance them.
Yeah. I kind of enjoyed it from the standpoint of tracing the individuals, especially Takahiro from his young days, those youthful pictures, and when they started doing the documentary, and we were involved in it almost 2 years. They traveled with us, they slept with us, they stayed in the campgrounds. They came to your homes, so they were fairly thorough in trying to put this thing together. And at first, you never really know for sure what's going on, but it became obvious to me that the story here was not necessarily fishing. In fishing, there's always the mind, the body, and most of us stress the mind, the body being the physical part of fishing, the mechanics and all of that, and then the body, the intellectual part, the instinctual part of fishing. And most of us involved in the sport, and I think involved in anything to any great depth that you have to be involved in it to excel, eventually realize there is some, whether you're a spiritual being or not, there is some spiritual part to everything. And I think all of a sudden, that's kind of where the movie kind of went off, was into how different people interpret that. And I saw the movie as it went by, and even now, after seeing the movie itself, the documentary, that's really kind of what he was attempting to do, was to show Jay Yellis on one hand and his spiritual alignment, and then mine on the other, and then he tried to put Takahiro in between us, that there was this being in a different country, a different culture, this kind of tug of war, real or unreal, conscious or unconscious, going on, that he was called in. You know, from that standpoint, he actually could have gone a lot deeper than he did. Because there's a lot goes on behind the scenes that most people don't know in the sport. And documentaries, usually, that's one of the things they do, is they really do delve into that element that everybody knows about the guys catching fish, and everybody knows about, a little bit of their family background and this and that. But there's always, unfortunately, there's always this hidden, the politics of the sport, you might call it. So I felt like they hinted at that, but I guess even though it would have been very dangerous, I wish they would have gone into that a little bit deeper.
Well, you know, Rick, as a guy sitting on the outside watching this for the first time and having the opportunity to know all the parties in it, you could kind of read between the lines, you know, you could kind of see what the intent was and the struggles that were going on between, you know, the way that a Christian might think versus the way that, you know, you do from a spiritual standpoint. It's a thing where it really wasn't as blatantly, you know, out there maybe as it could have been. But I think if you could read between the lines, you could see it.
Yeah, I guess what I disliked about it, and I'm going to just be honest, was that there's always a cover-up in that area. And they maintain the cover-up, and I really was surprised me that they did that. Christian spirituality is looked at as being a completely positive entity, especially in this country. You know, I was baptized when I was 12 years old. I went to church and all my early life. I actually went to church until my father had us quit going to church because my sister come home crying one day from church, and they had told her she was going to hell because she was a ballet dancer. And my dad got fed up with that. And so I really didn't go to church much after that, except with my grandmothers. But I saw the same thing going on. It was this dark side of Christianity, I guess, is what I put it. And yet I kept really trying to look at the positive side, because just like in anything in life, there's good and there's bad, even within the Christian groups. The thing that really finally got me was that when I won the Classic in 1990, and I actually referred to a book called Johnson, Livingston, Seagull, and how it was about the unlimited abilities and potential of the human being. And I was fascinated with that when I read it. And I've studied it and applied it a lot in my fishing and even signed my autographs, There Are No Limits, because of that. And I also referred to the Zen and the Art of Archery, how you can become one, how you can, with what you do, you know. If you, any athlete, even the Olympic bobsledders, you know, they go through visualization processes to really see the whole course before they run the course. Well, and I made statements like that during my presentation, and about 3 months after that, I'd found out that our focus group that's at the Bass Tournaments, they have their little Christian meetings every night, were trying to find copies of the tape to analyze it for Satanism, and that was kind of my final straw. You know, I'd seen it with my sister. I'd seen this cover-up of this dark side of that religion, and now it was hitting me in dead face. And I took it personal. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I did, because it was like they were trying to assassinate my character. You know, in the old days, they would burn you at the stake if they considered you a heretic. But now here they can't really do that in this country, at least so far. And but that group within my sport does a lot of that type of covert work, and that's where I was, to be perfectly honest, I was hoping that would come out, because you know, I've had a lot of young anglers come to me over the years and say, I went to the Christian meeting and they told me if I don't join them, I will not be getting any sponsors. I don't believe negative reinforcement is the way you should sell that. I mean, I believe there's a lot of good qualities. I absolutely believe in this man they call Jesus, even though I think 90% of the time they misrepresent him. That's my problem with the tape, is that it allowed this struggle. You know, this whole country was founded on religious persecution as one of its main things, and people came to this country to escape religious persecution. Man, we have the, you know, our Constitution says, you know, you have the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, but, and that's all that most of us, or myself included, are asking for. The question that is never asked, and I thought he might address in this, who does the persecuting? And that's the question that, as a child, I knew people were persecuted, but nobody ever told me who did the persecuting. And so, I don't pretend to, in fact, I think everybody should, again, go back to the very basics, and that is everybody in this country has the right to pursue their spirituality the way they want. The bottom line, the freedom of religion. I hate to admit it, but in my simple little game that I play of fishing, I see the same internal workings going on of using fear and negative reinforcement to try to force people to think one way or think another. And if they don't, then you try to assassinate their character.
Well, Rick, you know, anybody that knows you have great character. And, you know, it's a situation where everybody, as you say, you know, you'll be able to read between the lines when you watch this film. You know, the Takahiro parts, unbelievable. I remember one time in an airport, you and I were talking, and you said he held up a trophy of yours that you'd won at the Classic above his head at your home. And I got to see that actually happen. And I watched your facial expression. I watched what happened there. And, man, I tell you what, you know, it was like coming back. It was like, wow, this is really cool. And those kind of things really came out in the film, I thought.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed that part of that, especially the Takahiro experience that was reflected in the film, because it's about a young kid who had a dream and was willing to make the ultimate commitment, and then actually to see him go full circle and achieve that dream, I really felt was one of the neater things in the documentary. Like you're hinting at, you know, just shortly before he actually won the Classic and hoisted the trophy there at in North Carolina over his head, he had asked me at my house if he could hold one of mine. And at first, I didn't get it. I didn't get what he was saying. I said, sure, you can hold it. And then the minute he hoisted it over his head here in my office, it hit me what he was doing, and he was simply, again, trying to, he wanted to feel what it felt like. He actually wanted to have a physical feeling of what it felt like so he could imagine it happening to him. And again, that was kind of, so I really, in fact, it was kind of emotional for me when I was watching him actually do it for real and see the fulfillment of his dream.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You know, our life is made up of that, and fishing is one of those dreams that when it comes to fruition for you and you get that big trophy and you get the things, you know, that you meet the goal, it's really neat for people. And, you know, Bassmaster Classic coming up very quickly. you got a chance for number five. You know, when you start thinking about that, how important is that to you? You know, that's big news.
Well, I think it's always important, but any major event like that is really to me, those who achieve the ultimate in whatever their sport or profession is have definitely a higher hunger, a higher desire than the others around them. And that the power of that desire and that hunger is that it can actually neutralize a lack of ability that you may have over some of the other people in the field. And the reverse is true. In other words, you can have more ability than anybody in the field, but if you don't have that hunger and desire, then it may not translate into you winning the event. So that's that real magical fine thing about the Classic itself or any event of that caliber. We just watched the Super Bowl in football. Is the team that played the best game there didn't win the Super Bowl. But I think the team that had really the hunger to win it did, and so there's the perfect example that desire and hunger can offset ability many, many times.
Well, Rick, I appreciate you being with us here at Bass Fan Radio. Wish you the best of luck at the Classic and hope to see you out on the trail soon.
Thank you.
I'm Terry Brown, and this has been Bass Fan Radio.